forward seems too much. When you feel totally out of touch, hope is seeping out the door. You find yourself curled on the floor. The thoughts swirl round, all jumbled and messed. Why is this brain so darkly obsessed? I've secrets I've never confessed. Haven't told a soul. Gentle whisper through the pain. Remember rainbows follow rain. Breathe deeply, hold on tight. Your hope will return, shining bright. Embrace the now, release the past. In forgiveness, peace will last. You matter deeply. You're
your strength be shown. Hello there.
It's Elaine Lindsay. This is Suicide Zen Forgiveness. And today I am here with my guest. This is James Donaldson. Hello, James.
All right. Good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm great. And thank you so much for joining me here today. We're going to have a talk about James and about your Gift of Life Foundation. And we're going to start with me letting James tell us a bit about who he is and what he does and why. And then we'll get into his story as we usually do. So go ahead, James, give us a little bit about you.
All right. I live in Seattle, Washington. I've been here about 40 plus years, 45 years, and have loved it up here in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest. So for all these years, I've been quite a few different things over the years. A professional athlete at one time, small business owner, and now the owner of this nonprofit foundation I started up, Your Gift of Life Foundation, which is behind me there. And so those are the three big major careers of my life and accomplishments. And so currently I spend a lot of time speaking to our youth, especially middle schools and high school students, about mental health awareness, suicide prevention. And as we all know, they are still greatly impacted from the COVID years, the pandemic, and now living in this age of social media and iPhones and everything else, they have a total different upbringing. There's a great book out called The Anxious Generation, and he talks about a phone-based childhood instead of a play-based childhood, which we all had. So these kids are having a phone-based childhood, and that's the furthest thing from reality and real life, which we all need in growing up, and forming and forging permanent and lifelong friendships and relationships that I'm fearful a lot of our young people just won't have when they get a little bit further down the road. My other audience I speak with and love working with is men, trying to get men to be okay, not being okay, to ask for help, to realize they need help at times, and to reach out for help and get them more comfortable with that. That's a tough nut to crack, but little by little, if we can get more men to be okay and to speak on this topic like I speak on it, and that would go so much further towards so many of our men living a life of isolation and independent and by themselves and not having a lot of friends and not having a support network. Yeah. All of those things are crucial, especially as we get a little bit older. I'm 68 years old now, so I've been around doing this for a while and living this life for a while. And so many men, we get to this age, we've gone through a marriage or two, we've gone through the kids are grown up, they're out of the way. And now we find ourselves all by ourselves trying to figure it out. And it's just not a good thing. So that's what I do. That's who I am. And that's the work that I'm doing currently.
Wow. It's a lot, and it's incredibly important. Men are the, I want to say, the demographic, probably for me, it's close to youth, that we are losing the most. Mm-hmm. And I'm older than you. I'll be 70 in November.
All right.
And I can totally attest to being an outdoor child. I left the house, bolted out that door the moment I could in summer, and only came back on penalty of death. I was mm-hmm. not one to stay in the house. We were always in the ravines and climbing trees and getting that fresh air and that vitamin D. But as a girl and now a woman, I was brought up knowing that men were to be strong and silent. They took care of everything. They were stoic. They were always the calm in the storm. And that's horrible. It's horrible because I've told the story once before. We were at home in Scotland. We were staying at my grandparents. I don't know what happened. I don't know any of it. But in the middle of the night, my father was sitting on the edge of the bed. My mom was beside him, and his shoulders were shaking. And it took my breath away because my father was a military man. My father was the rock for our family and had to be because there was a lot of illness in our family and things that required a rock. And it was very hard as a young woman to get past that. I, of course, did. And the fact that by the end, my father was able to be much more open than he had ever been, because working class people in Scotland were brought up, the men were stoic. There's that word again. They were stoic. They didn't complain. They didn't talk about their problems. And they certainly didn't have feelings. You could be angry. And you could be annoyed and you could be happy. And that was about it. That was all men were allowed.
Yeah.
And it's sad that when I had my second or my third child was my son, I didn't know what to do with this little person. I didn't know how or what to teach him or not teach him because I came from such a different group of generations. And that's exactly what you said. We were the play people and they are phone people. And I don't think I've ever thought of it in that way, the phone thing. But it's true. Kids, I think most millennials don't know how to look someone in the eye.
No.
My son is a millennial. He's 42. But he was a child model and then an actor, and he had to look people in the face because he went on ghosties and cattle calls and things that most children don't. So he had a different learning through that. Most kids that I see, and the youth probably that you deal with, they don't have any of that. They don't have any of that training. They're so busy looking at their phone.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. Do you have grandchildren?
I don't have children or grandchildren, no.
Oh, okay. Our grandchildren and their friends, they all have phones. And to me, the hilarious thing is the only thing they don't use them for is a phone. They don't take calls.
No, that's right.
That's so bizarre.
Elaine, have you heard of the book, The Anxious Generation?
I think so. I have not yet read it. I will have to.
It came out last year, and it's getting a lot of great reviews. I've read it thoroughly. I resort to it as a reference all the time. Get a lot of great statistics out of there, where our children now are spending up to 12 hours a day on average on social media. And so that's a long time when you go to school for 6 or 7 hours and you're trying to have a little bit of time for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah.
They're not sleeping. They're underneath their covers on their phone at 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning. So this is a big problem. And it's since the advent of the iPhone in 2008 that all these kids now, 14, 15, 16 years of age, have been raised with a iPhone or iPad in their crib.
Yeah.
And that has become their best friend and their reality. And it's just really, it's going to be very detrimental the next 10, 20 years for these kids.
Yeah, because it's, until you said that, thinking about the phone.
Yeah.
It's, my God. Yeah, it is such a different dynamic. And I'm even seeing older people these days. You'll see them in coffee shops. There's a group of them at a table. Yeah. At least half of them are on their phone.
They're talking
to the people. I guess our family, some of us are aberrations. My phone is in my office.
Yeah.
I have a bad habit of walking out of my office. And then a few hours later is, oh, I don't even know where my phone is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not used to that, having to have it near. Because we grew up with one phone on the wall or on the table, and you had to go to the phone. You couldn't take the phone where you were. So it does make a big difference. I know that my kids limit their children's time on the phone, on the tablet, on the video games. And my daughter-in-law is a personal trainer.
Yeah.
So her boys only get video games if they're on the trampoline, because they must be doing some exercise if they're going to be playing video games. Yeah. Now, all of their group, all the kids are in soccer and gymnastics and hockey, and they still have these other activities, because I think you have to be able to put them with other kids their age.
Yeah.
Rather than have them, just them and this inanimate object.
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't realize it was quite that bad.
Yeah, that's right. And your daughter is a 1%er, 1% of parents who parent that way. 99% of the parents do not parent that way. So the kids are left to be raised by a phone, basically. Get all their information from their phone, their perspectives and beliefs are coming from the phone, being radicalized on the phone, social media, different ideologies they pick up. So it's not coming from parents and from mentors and next door neighbors like it was when we were growing up. So totally different. And this is what we're dealing with now.
My day job has always been in the digital world, integration and optimization and different things. And quite often, have been brought in by a parent or a grandparent to solve an issue for a child that is either being bullied or is having anxiety or depression from the out of proportion, wonderful lifestyles they see on other social media channels. And it really is terrifying.
Yeah.
To think that you can reel them in so easily, because if it looks like Bobby Sue has a wonderful life and is going to all the parties and doing all the things and buying all the stuff, and they're not, and this little boy is getting to play all the sports and meeting all the big people and what have you, that's not real life. It's not how it's meant to be.
Yeah.
And I realize we've come a long way from being teenagers, but I can still remember where I think it was my grandmother who said, if so-and-so jumped off a bridge, would you be right there with them? And the answer back then was, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I get that mindset. But oh my God, how much more terrifying when it's really not real life.
No, but it's night and day difference. You have to throw out all the experiences we had, because it doesn't apply to today's youth.
Yeah.
We've got memories, that's all we have, but you can't apply that to today's youth. not in North America, not in industrialized countries, maybe a second, third world country that doesn't have the technology we have.
Yeah.
Family's still important. Playtime's still important. But not in America, not in Canada, in Europe, no. Yeah. Big problem.
So what got you, what was the trigger that got you involved to the point that you wanted to start a foundation or get this involved? What was it that spurred you?
Life was good for up until about 10 years ago when I had emergency open heart surgery that was life-saving and kept me here for, still here, kept me here doing the work I'm doing. It was a series of major surgeries, two or three of them on my heart, one of them on my lung, and still compromised still to this day of not being able to physically do a lot of things I used to do. I look fine, can't walk too far, can't climb stairs and all those things. So that really bothers your mental state at some point. During this recovery time, this was back 2015, 2016. During the recovery time, I was running my business. I was a small business owner at a time for 30 years. And I really physically could not run it anymore because I was 100% owner, didn't have other partners to turn to. I exhausted all my life savings, trying to keep the business going, trying to keep 25 or 30 employees on board. And one thing after another started happening. Life events, not so much what I did to myself, no substance abuses or anything like that, but life events. Starting with my mother passing away in 2016, that's a life event. Yeah, it hits you hard when you're not expecting it.
Yeah.
My wife at the time walked out of her marriage in 2016, shortly after my mother passed, and I'm still recovering from my surgeries. Oh. I'm exhausting my life savings, and by 2018, I had to close my long-running business and then started having the major mental health challenges that come along, anxiety, depression, suicidal ideations, all through 2018. Received help from my medical doctors and professionals, counseling, prescription medication, a small group of intimate friends around me. And for 12 months, just I call it 12 months of pure darkness and hell that I had to go through and had to work my way through because I saw no tomorrow. I saw no hope. And that's very common with what these things put you through. But eventually, after 12 months, the darkness started lifting a little bit. I was able to resist those impulses of hurting myself and taking myself out of this world and finally started to recover and realize what my purpose was in life still, why I'm still here. And I realized it was really to use my platform as a former athlete, as a male, as an African-American male, someone, a fixture in the community, a business person, that people would listen to and people would look up to. And I discovered and realized that, wow, this is why I'm still here, to form this foundation, which would give me a platform for getting out there and speaking on this topic and to give people the hope that they no longer have, to help them realize that there is still hope. There is a tomorrow. I know you don't feel it at the moment, but there is. You have to just keep persevering, pushing through, get the help you need, put your small group of friends around you, pay attention to your medical professionals, and just grunt it out. There's no shortcut. Tomorrow won't be better just because you snap your fingers. It will take months, if not years, for a lot of folks. It took me 1 year, 12 months. And so that's why I'm doing the work that I'm doing with your Gift of Life Foundation. And it has really given me a whole new chapter of life. This started up in 2019, Your Gift of Life. And I plan on doing it the rest of my life. This is my whole new chapter after the other chapters have closed now. And this is what I want to do the rest of the way.
Wow. My hat's off to you. That is quite selfless. And I think that's wonderful because we don't see enough of that. And I think every community, so where you are in Seattle, every community needs people who understand that there's more than just us, that we need to look outside of our immediate group and try and help those that we may not be connected to in a familial way, but that we are connected to because they're other human beings too.
And that's right. That's right. And men in particular see my story. They see me doing the podcast and the video, YouTube videos. And they reach out to me quite a bit from around the country because they want to talk to a man. They don't want to go to their doctor. They don't want to talk to their girlfriend or to their wife, significant other. And they won't. But they will talk to me because they say, wow, James, he knows. He's been through this. He knows what it's all about. And I'm not going to judge them. They know I'm not going to be judgmental, which is a big fear for so many of us going through this. And so I'm more than happy to set aside the time for talking to men. I want to start an online coaching or consultation service as well. And that way I can actually book my time out to people all around and they can schedule a time with me, which I'll be more than happy to give back. This is my give back and my paying forward to other folks who can benefit from what I went through. And realize that hey, if I can make it through, they can make it through. There's no need for 50,000 people a year in the United States to take their lives. Yeah. And that's where we're at. Yeah. That's where we're at now. I don't know about Canada, it's probably 10 or 20,000, but 50,000 a year take their lives in the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, we're taping this on September 1st. This is the first day of National Suicide Prevention Month, September.
Yeah.
So
it is.
By the time this is out, it'll be mid-September. Happy celebrate National Suicide Prevention Month.
Yeah, and suicide prevention awareness this month is around the world. I mean, World Suicide Prevention Day is September the 10th.
Right.
But there are things happening all around the world. There are walks and meetings and all kinds of things going on, not just in September. I put up some information today for things that are happening in early October as well. I would like to see us do things every month. Mm-hmm. I think it's that important. And I believe for youth around the world, it may just be America, it is one of the top 10 ways we lose youth.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's just not acceptable.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is so much more we need to let our youth see that's there for them.
Yeah.
If we can just get them to have some hope.
Yeah.
That's understand right. That there really are things that are coming as you get older, that it's important to wait for.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but again, this social media generation, instant gratification generation, they're not taught to hang in there and do the hard work and good things will come. They expect it this afternoon. I push a button and here I call Amazon and it comes by 5 p.m.
It's true. It's true.
That's where we live.
We've done it to ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
We really have. We just got a new service from Amazon here that you can get it between 4 a.m.
That's right.
And 8 a.m. in the morning.
That's right.
Now, I don't know what I need that I need it so badly that I wanted here at 4 in the morning, because God willing, I'm asleep.
If you realize your toaster went out last night and you need a toaster for the morning, it'll be on your front porch when you wake up. So something like that. But this is where we are nowadays.
This is a wild thought, but maybe tomorrow morning I'll just have cereal.
That's what we have to use. That's what we used to have to resort to. We had to be resourceful. You don't need that anymore. And with AI, you don't need to even think anymore. So these kids now.
That's absolutely true.
A lot of things to work through. And it's people like us who've been around a while who can reach back and help show these young people the way. And hopefully they'll listen
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we were young once upon a time. We had to learn by heart life's hard lessons and hard knocks every now and then. But we at least had people showing us the way and trying to advise us. And that's what these young people need now.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that a lot of the immigrants that are coming to North America now still live by the extended family rather than the nuclear family. And I guess I was a bit of an aberration back then because I came to Canada with my mom, my dad, my grandmother, and my aunt. So we were an extended family, which was good because we really didn't have anybody here. But having those extra family members gives you a little more of a village and a little more of the flavor of that family. It's not just mom and dad, because by the time you're 11 or 12, mom and dad are the enemy.
Sure.
Having another family member that you can gripe to, I think it makes it a little easier sometimes for children. And it's sad that we got away from that.
We really have. Kids now, they don't know their mom and dad because they are on their phones all the time. The mom and dad don't really know the kids because there's not the communication around the dinner table like there used to be. And so there's strangers living in the same household.
Yeah.
And then they wonder why these kids go off and do crazy things. We just had, another mass shooting a couple of days ago.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And you wonder why these young people, 21 years old, grows up to do these kind of things. They just don't have the guidance, the influence, the mentoring, the parenting that we had. And it's, I know we keep comparing yesteryear with today, but it just, there's no comparison.
No, there's no comparison. But the fact is, I think very often, parents nowadays are afraid to rock the boat.
That's right.
You don't want to push too hard. We went through the late 80s and early 90s where the parents became, I want to be your friend. I don't want to be your parent.
That's right. That's right.
That doesn't work. You are the parent, whether you want to be or not. And understanding that part of your job is to keep your children safe.
Yes.
Sometimes you have to say and do the hard things.
That's right.
It's not easy.
No, but no. And those kids are now out all protesting and demonstrating against any kind of authoritarian figures, against any kind of rules, regulations of society. They don't want to hear from law enforcement. They don't want to hear from the White House in America. They don't want to hear from community and political leaders. But again, these are authority figures in our lives that we need to at least be respectful of, but we're not because of the way those kids were raised. And the parents are out there.
Absolutely. But also, these kids are seeing the models of adults who have no respect for the law, who have no respect for other humans.
So, of course, it's natural.
How are they to model what's right when they see some in power that are so wrong?
That's right.
And it's hard. How do you get through to little Johnny that, I know that's an adult. And yes, I know that's an adult in an authoritarian position, but disregard that and do what I tell you, which we're sending these kids mixed messages as well.
Which
makes it harder.
That's right. We have to model what we'd like to see in our children.
Yeah.
A lot of parents do not parent very well. Kids want to call you Elaine instead of mom. That's not good. But we didn't do that when we were growing up, but they do that now. It's totally, you're the best friend. You're not their parent.
Well, this is it. And it became a thing the late 90s that the parents wanted to be their friend.
Yep.
You can't be a friend and have the authority you need to keep that child safe.
That's right. That's right.
I don't care how flexible you are or how mentally agile you think you are. First and foremost, you're a parent. And I think that's part of where we've gone wrong. And that was the generation after us, because frankly, this is the way it's always gone. Every generation wants to do it better than their parents did it for them.
Of course.
My father hated my music.
Yeah.
My mother sang along with everybody.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter. But my father just thought that was garbage. That was trash. It wasn't music.
Yeah.
It won't be around in 50 years. Well, it still is. We fought those things against our parents, who fought against their parents, who have always been that that generational divide.
Yes.
And I think
But the big game changers now
is the phone.
Previous generations is technology and the phones.
Yeah.
Okay. And generations of hands-off parenting have we've done it to ourselves.
Absolutely.
And so individually we just have to do better. Individually we have to reach out to each other.
Yeah.
Because you can legislate all you want. It's not going to just bring people together to make them love each other and care for each other. We have to individually be able to do that kind of stuff. I do want to mention, coming through those 12 months I went through, I was able to chronicle all of that, remember all of that, put it all together into a nice book that I'd love to be able to talk about as well on the show, if you will permit. But that's one of the other things that I do is I do a lot of professional speaking, a lot of speaking to groups and kids and everything else. And so that's a big part of what I'm doing now.
Excellent, excellent. And as per usual, we will have all of that information down below, along with the show notes. We'll have all the information about James and how you can get a hold of him.
Great.
Should you want him to come and talk to your group?
I've got a copy of my book I can show if you'd like. And that
way
we can get a glimpse of it. Here it is. Whoop. Okay. It doesn't show you up.
Bring it up a little bit closer. Oh, with your green screen, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get you to send me a picture of that, and we'll make sure it's below too, so that you can get a link.
Yeah.
Is it available on Amazon?
It's Amazon, but if you want a actual signed copy of it, which I do, I'm more than happy to do. The title of the book is Celebrating Your Gift of Life. And
Celebrating Your Gift of Life. Okay.
Yes. And I'm going to upload an image file for you right now. And the website to get that is over at www.celebratingyourgiftoflife.com.
Okay. Bear with me for one second. Okay. Hang on. Let's hope I can spell. Celebrating Your Gift of Life. I'm challenged when it comes to typing.
That's okay.
My kids get a real laugh out of the fact that I can't type. I can use all the tech toys and everything else, but I'm not very good with
there you go. Perfect. And I did upload it. I don't know if it's on your end or my end, how we can show it on the screen.
Oh, it's on the screen.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. It's right below both of us. And
well, your type is not the image of the book cover. That's what I'm
saying. No. We won't be able to put the image up from here.
Okay. That's fine.
Unfortunately.
This website is where you can go and order a copy of your book personally, pretty personal signed by me. I'll put any note in there, any inscription in there that you wanted to, and put it to the person that you want to put it to. They're $20 a piece US with shipping and handling, especially to Canada, probably $27, $28. There's a copy of the book.
There we go. Okay. All right. Yeah, that's fabulous.
And it's a real helpful resource of not only telling my story, but a lot of helpful exercises at the end of every chapter of helping people to work through what they're going through, writing down some of your thoughts and some of your emotions at the time, So this is what I take with me every time I speak and talk about things.
Oh, that is excellent, because journaling is really important.
It is. I journal every day still. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a great way to relive your life and what you went through that day.
Yeah.
Because 2 weeks later, you forget all about it. But if you go back two or three months even, I can go back years in my journaling and say, wow, I actually said that and did that and lived through that. Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible when you go back through those diaries.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so anyway, any of your audience members, I'd appreciate picking up a copy. The money goes towards my Gift of Life Foundation, which we are trying to do a scholarship fund for our students, particularly students of color going into the mental health profession.
Excellent.
This is one of the reasons why so many communities of color are so reluctant to reach out for mental health help, because they just don't see anybody that looks like them across the desk. They don't see anybody they feel will relate to them, whether they're African-American, Hispanic, Indian, Native American, transgender, LGBTQ. Yeah. They just don't see that person who can, they feel really intuitively understand them, and then be able to help them. And so if we can get more and more students into the pipeline, 10 years from now, they can go out to their various communities and provide mental health services, which is what the whole mission of Your Gift of Life is all about.
James, I thank you so much. That is incredible. Thank you. If you could tell our audience one little tip or tweak that you use every day, or every week, something that they can take away with them to use in their life toolbox, if you will, what would you suggest?
In the midst of these mental challenges that I went through and millions of people go through every single year, you need to realize that you are not alone. I know there's a stigma attached to it, and you feel like people will think that you're crazy, something's not right with you. But you have to realize that you're not alone, and it's okay not to be okay. It's okay to ask for help and to bring your close friends around you. They need to know that you're having a struggle. They need to know if you're thinking about hurting yourself or departing this world. They need to know, and that way they can help you. Mental health is one of those things that you can't see it from the outside. On the outside, we all look perfectly fine. And it looks like our lives are just perfect, picture perfect. But on the inside, so many of us are really struggling. And people won't know unless you let them know and tell them. Same with our kids. You have to talk to your parents, talk to your teachers, your school counselors, because they just don't know. They see you every single day, but they can't tell anything is amiss with you or awry with you. They can't tell. So the onus is on us, folks who've gone through mental health challenges, to realize you're not alone and to reach out for help. You know, we got suicide prevention hotlines that are there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, multiple languages, and they will be a real live person, not a chat bot, not an AI person. A real live person will pick up the phone and talk with you and walk you through that journey to get you some help, to get you through the night. I called them several times at 2 or 3 in the morning when I couldn't sleep and thinking about hurting myself. And so these are all the things you need to know. Help is right there at your fingertips, but you've got to be able to reach out and put your fingers on it, okay? Get you a best friend who can come around and just sit with you for minutes or hours on end. And you don't need to be in deep conversation about what you're going through. Just somebody who can be there. The physical, Elaine and I were talking about, the physical presence of another person is something we're all missing. And to have that next to you, sitting on the couch, being able to reach out and touch you on the arm, put a shoulder around you, is so valuable. And so I just want to make sure I hit that point home, that we're not alone, help is readily available, but it's up to you to be able to reach out and ask for that help. And make it through like I made it through and be able to give back and moving forward.
That's beautiful. And I totally agree with you. Yeah. The most important lesson I ever learned was I am not alone.
There you go.
I want everyone to take that to heart. Yes. We are not alone.
Mm-hmm.
Just reach out. And you can reach out and tell someone. You don't even need them to respond. You just want them to listen.
That's right. That's right.
And that is so valuable. So on that note, as I said, we'll make sure everything about James and what James does is below in the show notes and transcript. We'll have the link to the book so that you can go there and get that. And also the Gift of Life Foundation, all that information will be there. My guest, James Donaldson, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm Elaine Lindsay. This is Suicide Zen Forgiveness. And just remember, make the very most of your today, every day. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for being here for another inspiring episode of Suicide Zen Forgiveness. We appreciate you tuning in. Please subscribe and download on your favorite service and check out SZF's YouTube channel or Facebook community. If you have the chance to leave a 5-star rating or review, it'd be greatly appreciated. Please refer this to a friend you know who may benefit from the hope and inspiration from our guests. Suicide Zen Forgiveness was brought to you by the following sponsors. Trul Social Media, the digital integration specialists. Let them get you rocking page one in the search results. Canada's keynote humorist Judy Kroon, motivational speaker, comedian, author, and stand-up coach at Second City. Judy has been involved for over a decade in the City Street Outreach Program in Toronto. Do you have a story to share? Do you know someone you think would be a great guest? Please go to SZF42.com. And for our American listeners, that's SZF42.com. Thank you for listening. And we hope